Laudator Jesus Christus, Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Thursday, the 5th of December, South Koreans move to impeach President Yoon Suk-yeol, and Pope Francis has a new Pope-mobile. But first, the UN warns that 5.4 million people in Haiti are in dire need of assistance. In the Vatican, I'm Francesca Merlo. In Haiti, the situation remains drastic as more than 5.4 million people are in urgent need of aid and 700,000 people have been displaced from their homes following the recent escalation of gang violence in the country. UN News spoke with Erwan Rumain, Deputy Country Director of the World Food Programme in Haiti, about the situation and one of the programmes they are implementing to bring basic necessities, including food, to the people in the country.
Indeed, the food security situation in Haiti is extremely worrisome. You will have seen certainly the latest results of the IPC released in September 2024, highlighting 5.4 million of Haitians in a situation of emergency or crisis in regards to the food security, with some pockets of a catastrophic situation. What do these figures tell us? These figures tell us that, unfortunately, Haiti ranks in percentage of the population in one of the worst as far as the food security situation is concerned. More practically, you know, when we say that 2 million of Haitians are in IPC4, you know, i.e. emergency, what does it mean? It means that one mother out of five in Haiti has nothing to answer to their children when they say, daddy, I'm hungry. One pillar in which we are trying to ensure that there is a bit of hope for Haiti and its population. And this pillar is basically what we call internally the resilience building aspect. Some could say development, but basically it turns around specific projects. The most famous one is the school meal project, school meals. And Haiti, it's quite a successful one. It's completely aligned with the government objectives. That is that by 2030, all the children in Haiti will benefit from one meal at school a day, and this meal has to be, by law, locally purchased and locally procured. So we are already present to support the government in this type of direction in 90% of the communes of Haiti, and we are currently reaching 500,000 students, and 70% of this food is already locally procured, so we are quite happy with that. Of course, this goes with the support to the smallholder farmers that have to grow this food so that it feeds into this school through the local procurement, and that's part of basically what we do call the resilience building.
That was Erwan Rumain, the Deputy Country Director of the World Food Programme in Haiti, speaking to UN News. Churches and other religious groups in South Korea have joined public outcry against a failed attempt to impose martial law earlier this week. President Yoon Suk-yeol had declared martial law in a surprise late-night address on Tuesday, citing alleged threats from anti-state forces and North Korea. The president was subsequently forced to retract the declaration and is now facing mounting pressure to resign as parliament moves closer to a vote on his impeachment. In a statement issued on Wednesday, the Catholic Bishops' Conference of Korea strongly condemned the move and urged him to apologise to the South Korean people. Lisa Zingarini reports.
According to the Catholic Bishops of Korea, President Yoon must appear before the people to explain what happened, sincerely apologise to the people and take responsibility for first declaring and then lifting the martial law. In a strongly worded statement signed by their spokesman, Bishop Matthias Yong-Hoon Ri, the bishop said the retracted declaration of martial law raises numerous questions. Unless there is an urgent need, the government and administrative procedures of a state should be carried out in a normal manner and known to the citizens, they stated. The statement reaffirmed the Catholic Church's firm commitment to defending democracy in South Korea, which they said, referring to the country's previous history of military authoritarian rule, has been built with great sacrifice. The South Korean bishops insisted on accountability and dialogue, urging President Yoon and the government to sincerely respond to the requests of the Catholic Church of Korea and the Korean people. Several other religious groups, including Christian churches, also condemned Yoon's move, stating that it was against the democratic principles on which South Korea was founded. Bishop King Chung-suk, president of the Korean Methodist Church, expressed shock at what he termed as an affront to democracy. The Korean Church Human Rights Center, which grew out of the National Council of Churches in Korea in September and is one of Korea's largest Christian groups, said the martial law order was undemocratic and that Christians will topple the Yoon government should it continue not to heed the voice of the people. In similar statements, some Buddhist groups also said Yoon has overthrown the constitutional order and expressed their support for impeachment efforts. I am Lisa Zingarini.
Meanwhile, French President Emmanuel Macron was meeting allies and senior politicians on Thursday as he sought to swiftly appoint a new prime minister a day after far-right and leftist lawmakers toppled Michel Barnier's minority government. François Bayrou is the name often cited by French media as a possible successor to Barnier, a veteran centrist politician and a close Macron ally. Africa is not a country is the name of a recent book by Dipo Faloyan, which aims to challenge common misconceptions about the continent. The book, which came out in English in 2022, has just been published in Italian. And to mark the occasion, Faloyan spoke to Vatican Radio about the origin of Western stereotypes about Africa.
Really, it started around the time of the beginning of colonialism and the emergence of the colonial powers who wanted to take over Africa. And so they met in 1884, 140 years ago now, in Berlin at the Berlin Conference. And this was a meeting where they sort of established many of the myths that we know about Africa today in order to justify going in there and stealing the land for themselves. So that's when they started sort of telling people that, you know, Africans are savages, that they are uncivilized people and that they can't look after themselves. And so that really was the emergence of many of these myths, because there wasn't largely across the Western world anybody telling people anything different. That myth sort of stuck right through the decades. And, you know, they started to find a new home in popular culture, in the way in which films and TV shows depicted Africa, as well as especially in the way that charity campaigns depicted Africa. And so these things have been allowed to constantly grow and grow and grow without enough people knowing that, you know, there is a truth on the other side of that as well.
Yes, tell us briefly about the genesis of this book.
I mean, for me, I've always been passionate about this topic, and I've always sort of been passionate about breaking these myths. As someone who's from, you know, an African country, you know, growing up, I felt that people had never really appreciated my own personal identity. And, you know, I had always sort of felt that people had never really fully given us the space to tell our own stories and had been quick to tell our own stories for us. And so that's why, you know, I wanted to write this book. And so the stories that I focus on are the stories largely of how these African countries were created and the process by which, you know, these communities were brought together in a way that went completely against our own sort of natural groupings to produce very large countries with as many different ethnic groups and languages as possible. You know, that really was something that was incredibly disruptive. So I wanted to focus on those stories.
That was Dipo Faloyan, author of Africa is Not a Country, speaking there to Vatican Radio's Antonella Palermo. Turning to Vatican news, Pope Francis met today with the Canoness Sisters of the Holy Spirit in Saxony, just a few months after he extended the title Blessed to their founder, Guy de Montpellier. In his address, the Pope praised the vow of poverty in religious life as a bond that builds communion. Devin Watkins has more.
Pope Francis met Thursday with the Canoness Sisters of the Holy Spirit in Saxony, which were founded in Rome by Blessed Guy de Montpellier. The audience comes after the Pope extended the title Blessed to the 12th century French religious on May 18th, calling him a humble and modest servant of the poor. Speaking to his spiritual heirs on Thursday, the Pope recalled their mission to devote themselves primarily to the care and service of the poor. It is fascinating to see how God's plan matures in the kitchen of the heart, he said, and how the flavors and colors gradually permeate the rules of life, eventually spreading their fragrance throughout the church. Pope Francis highlighted the importance of communion, poverty, and service, as well as the connection between them. The Canonist sisters make a vow of poverty that requires them to live without anything of their own. This vow, noted the Pope, goes beyond the modern understanding of a rigorously sober and detached life. He said it means recognizing that we are guests in the house of the Trinity, which welcomes us and shares its dwelling with the poor. The vow of poverty connects closely with communion, he said, adding that it involves a total gift of ourselves to God through our brothers and sisters without reservation. Only in this freedom, he said, can we embark on a shared project that becomes an eschatological sign of the journey toward the eternal dwelling place to which God calls us. In conclusion, Pope Francis invited the Canonist Sisters of the Holy Spirit in Saxony to work to make their hearts and communities living temples of the Trinity. Religious life, he said, is a journey toward God, moved by the Holy Spirit, in which we become followers of Christ the Redeemer. I'm Devin Watkins.
And finally, whether in Italy, Papua New Guinea, or the United States, one thing that really symbolizes the Pope is his famous white car, or as it's officially referred to, the Popemobile. On the 4th of December, it was upgraded. Mercedes CEO team members gave Pope Francis a new convertible electric G-Class car during a ceremony in the Vatican. While it is not the first time Mercedes and the Vatican have worked together on a Popemobile, the CEO, Ola Källenius, described the experience as a great honour, paying attention to all the Holy Father's needs. Kelsey Gussie reports.
For 100 years, Mercedes has worked with the Vatican to provide the famous white car. The first Popemobile was given to Pope Pius XI in 1930. Designed specifically for Pope Francis on the occasion of the Jubilee year, this new G-Class Popemobile is scheduled to be used at a papal event in St. Peter's Square. A team of specialists from different Mercedes locations worked for almost a year with representatives from the Vatican to build a car tailored to the Pope's needs. One of the main priorities was zero emissions, as the Vatican plans to convert all its vehicles to emission-free by 2030. A goal they share with Mercedes. One of the team members who works on G-Class vehicles described the Popemobile was anything but cookie cutter, as there are numerous particularities specifically designed with Pope Francis in mind. Perfect for papal events, the Popemobile includes a rotating seat and all-wheel drive, designed for the low speed the cars often driven through St. Peter's Square during public audiences. The Mercedes team expressed their hope that the Popemobile will provide the Holy Father with the comfort he needs for his travels. Yet, with all the modern touches of the 2025 Popemobile, tradition is still factored in. Similar to its predecessors, the car is white and has the license plate SCV1, or State of Vatican City. I'm Kelsey Gussie.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, please visit vaticannews.va. But you can also find us on Facebook, on X, and on Instagram. Many thanks today go to Patrizio Cibrari, our sound engineer in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Francesca Merlo.